Yes, as I indicated, earlier on, today, unpacking the day, the day is going to be unpacked here, by Dwight Links. Dwight, good morning, how are you?
David, how are you doing, David?
I'm doing very well.
Thanks, David, for, sort of like holding the fort like
Yeah, how is your Friday?
Well, it's a Friday.
Yeah.
Obviously, in terms of seeing the developments happening,
Yeah.
and when I'm saying seeing,
Yeah.
is that obviously the president indicated today that she's leaving for the UN General Assembly,
Yeah.
which I saw on the way to the studio.
Yeah.
I mean, they blocked us, as a, the police escort.
Yeah.
They told us to wait. Doesn't matter how, if you're on your way to work that time of the morning,
Yeah.
you gotta wait.
It's true. You must give an opportunity to the citizen number one.
You know?
Maybe before I give you the mic, what I'm always curious to see what is that we expect from our president to that she's going to stand
At the,
UNGA
yeah.
for the first time as a president, but she has already been there
as
as a
a foreign,
diplomat. Yeah, but what is that we expect from her?
Well, even though the indication that State House gave yesterday, so
Yeah.
I'm talking about now the I almost said public relations. What do they call those guys? Yeah, let's call it the PR department of State House.
Yeah.
So they indicated there that the president, since the president will be there literally for like 4 days maximum, because she's back on 27 or 26.
They are calling it the World Cup of Diplomacy.
But she won't be there as long as, for example, like last year, President Mbumba was, he was there for like extended 2 weeks because from UNGA he had to go to the Summit of the Future,
Oh, yeah.
which is obviously the launch of the Pact of the Future. And then from there he had to then they then he and his entourage then flew to Germany for the particular, what was that summit? What was that other panel discussion's name? The one specifically where we had to like, but it was just specifically out of a German university, and it was now something, something novel. Our president had to go talk there
Yeah.
in terms of what is the ambitions of Namibia, Germany's
Yeah.
relationships.
Yeah.
And then the year before that, 2023,
Mm.
President Geingob obviously, also had like, more than 5 days spending specifically at the UN General Assembly.
Yeah.
And the various meetings and obviously discussions that each one of these presidents have conducted,
Yeah.
obviously with President Nandi Ndaitwah,
Mm.
she's indicating she's going to the tri-state area, which is a bit weird to talk to business people and academia. So the tri-state area has been identified as the state of Pennsylvania. I don't know if Pennsylvania is a state. I'm just stating what
it
I read.
is, it is.
Delaware, which is a very small state, it's very tiny. And then the third one is New Jersey.
So we have a game plan.
Well, no, every year there is a game plan, but you
Okay.
see the game plan, how it sort of like varies from president to president. So it depends ultimately what we're going to see. What the president obviously will be citing is business opportunities, investment opportunities with Namibia, and women's empowerment discussions. Obviously at this high level, we have to obviously cite that there is, a particular unique discussion going to happen at UN General Assembly AD, because obviously in this particular climate that we find ourselves, they were thinking about moving the thing to Switzerland because of the American authorities didn't want to ex what you call it, extend visas to the Palestinian
So
representative.
is Netanyahu coming?
We don't know. We'll have to see.
Okay.
Because the EU this past week has, they have now sort of like steadily started using the language that what Netanyahu is busy with is crimes against humanity. Just this past week, the EU themselves. So
Okay.
it depends. It depends.
Yes, dear listeners, I'm going to leave you in the good hands of Dwight and bye-bye for now. So.
Yep, 100%, guys. We'll see each other after the break, after the handover.
Lipura nenge no wapumbwa eva tere uliko ni maondututo ingida, ashike kapeno nwe kudite opoye ekukurile. Oshafa fana nongeshefa ili mehola mo ihewe tike kovano ile koshuan. Onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano. Okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evi tota njuka. Okupitira oipindi konu konda doi minawa. Nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshefa omarudi dayo loka. Opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa. Ninge pata fanona Monica ko Eagle FM. Onore tatu imwe bali heali nola natu. Heali bali no heali ile kumberewa. Nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu o mafilane Eagle FM.
The views and opinions expressed by our guests and callers are not those of Eagle FM and any of its
Eagle staff. FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic.
And obviously, dear listeners, welcoming you to this Friday morning edition of the Unpacking the Day, specifically on your number one talk radio station. I see the phone line is flashing. Let me quickly get this first caller in, you know, in terms of doing my salutations and introduction. Eagle FM, good morning.
Yes, man, yes. I know this is your character.
Uncle Bona, how are you doing?
Fine, fine. I knew you were going to pick up, but when you are with Helmut, huh? The comedian, it's another disaster. So otherwise, I thought you were going to go it along with the young man who was just there. But never the rest, because you have given us already the direction of the discussion. Even though we come for the second time, because you are very democratic.
No, Agbona, we have to practice that element of democracy, you know? People must have the opportunity of participation.
Liberal democracy.
No. Agbona, I read up on liberal democracy. Actually, I was schooled by someone on liberal democracy. They cited specifically that liberal democracies are the democracies around the world that generate the most money. They generate the most business, the most kind of, you know, all those things to do with wealth creation and all that. No, you wanted to say something?
No, because the reason why I wanted you to expand more on that, because at one point you were saying, this is liberal democracy. So, but when they talk about liberal trade, liberalization of trading, what is it? This economic trend, where is it in what is it that you are talking about? That concept.
Yeah.
So, and the people are saying apparently it's the best.
Apparently, Uncle Bona, apparently, because, it's where the private sector determines everything. The government does not have a great stake. They don't have regulations. In Namibia, obviously, we've got regulations market to market. It is a balance, obviously, because you sometimes have to understand, can we Namibians operate in a liberal economy? Or can we Namibians ultimately function in, or do we like functioning in a highly regulated economy, like in Namibia's context?
Highly regulated in the sense that, yes, nobody can just do what they want, and then they can just exploit people, and then the regulation and policies, all these acts are not there and they'll be violated. But I think as long as the government is creating that conducive environment in terms of policy framework and many other instruments. So, and then why should it be, of course, the private partner, so have to now come in forcefully, unlike in Namibia, because here our private partners don't really come out forcefully.
Yeah.
So in terms of what they do is just to poach people from the, who are already shaped, tuned properly.
Yeah.
And they have acquired experience. That's when they go to the bank. That's when they go to those other sectors, private sectors.
Yeah.
But in terms of public-private partnership vehicle that is created there, I don't see people coming in much there. Even ourselves. Do you know that when people are talking about the future, you say people are going to talk about the future. So, and I think the future now there also includes specifically, I mean, it's also targeting the youth, isn't it? Because most of these other activities that I mentioned in the market now, in the liberal market, what? Can you pronounce that word for me again? Liberal.
Yeah, liberal market, Angabona. You are right.
Oh, so now those ones, opportunities that are coming, do we know that we can also, as we create our own entity, and then we now use that triple P for us to get into that? And if you use that one, I'm so sure you're not able to fail much.
Yeah.
Because I know they'll be mentoring you very all the time, and then you know it's the, you know, so, but it shouldn't be a vehicle for you to hide there, to hide your iniquity when you get there and then you say, because it's a public thing or whatever. No. So that I think because of that partnership, people don't normally capitalize on it. The private sector, when it's receiving, that's why they were told by at one point that yes, there must be an act, especially in education there, an act to compel them to really contribute much. Because they seem not to be contributing apart from this corporate social responsibility.
But Angabona, right there, you are answering the literal thing that the liberal economic guys don't like, is when you bring in an act, it's a regulation that compels some sort of behavior, and then supposedly the business sector, the private sector guys go like, nah, we don't like this much regulation or interference. So it is a tight balance, Angabona. It is literally a tight balance how we approach this particular thing. Because even in South Africa, Angabona, I know that we have many fellow Namibians that don't like hearing about the success story of South Africa, and primarily because of our negative history that we have with South Africa. But
no, we should hear so that we learn.
Yeah, but our history with South Africa literally has been, we have a template right next to us. We don't even have to look at China, Angabona. We don't even have to look at Europe. We just have to look at South Africa and to see what we can do good that can help everyone.
Exactly, because I just came to discover, to learn that South Africa has got two faces.
Yeah.
So it's a developed country and also a developing country.
Yes.
Then I was now asking myself and going deep and explore more, and I discovered that when you say you are developed, it's like you have now reached the level of, when you look at the hierarchy, Maslow hierarchy of needs. So it's like you have reached that actualization level.
Yeah.
It's like you have now. But if you are developing, I think you are moving. The process, it's the movement kind of developing. But South Africa has got apparently two phases.
Yep.
Developed and the developing country.
Yep.
So I think you would hear South Africa, even in terms of policies and other things, even though they are also, they actually also cost.
Titanium, the perfect fit between platinum and silver, complementing our existing benefit options. We always offer a comprehensive healthcare experience. NHP, the premier member-centric medical aid fund. Visit NHP today at nhp.com.na. NHP, we're about you.
Get so. Yes, Angabona, sorry for that.
I'm just trying to conclude this. Because you see, South Africa has done a great, South Africa is very good. It's a good example. It's a really, maybe not, I don't know whether this word fits their industrialized country. Well developed. They have a lot of things that we can learn. Of course, they use that money from us, from Namibia also.
Yeah.
And they are still, they have caused a lot of damage. In terms of our education, in terms of our, even the social order.
Yeah.
It was really disrupted. So we can learn a lot. So now that's why even but they are also learning a lot in terms of the policy.
100%.
Especially in the constitution.
100%.
Yeah, so at least they should be able to pay us for that one also. Because they have...
I'll concede that point, Angabona.
All the best, my brother.
100%. Thank you for coming through, Angabona.
Yeah.
So, dear listeners, obviously, you know, proper salutations, and obviously, once again, welcome there to our first caller's contribution that coming through, obviously, from Uncle Buana. Good morning, guys. We'll hope you are, you've got your coffee going. Hope you've got any kind of aspect that looks like a piece of sustenance that helps you with, you know, just getting you into the flow of your Friday morning. I know it's Friday. For some of you, you know, Helmut would have used his most pertinent descriptive terminology, citing specifically that there's a nexus of where your pay meets a weekend. Do take it easy, guys. You know, don't make us jealous in, you know, in the shops, as well as also flaunt your stuff around the country, wherever you might find yourself. However, the salutations are still good morning. Welcome to the Unpacking the Day for this Friday edition. Obviously, you'll be in my company this Friday, as well as also Monday. Just quickly standing in for my colleague, that being Mike Oshavelli, specifically in terms of also dissecting some of the talking points that are obviously coming through from the various particular subject matter. Obviously, we'll be starting off, obviously, with the Village e-paper, which has some interesting talking points as well. There's actually three of them that we've got to look at primarily, that ultimately being the notion of the... I know, women's empowerment is a discussion not much explored upon in Namibia in terms of a positive scenario, instead of in, you know, looking at the other particular aspects, you know, some of the noise scenarios, you know, where people just make noise, which usually is from a political perspective or an activist perspective. I came last night also from a particular talking point, and this is actually how the talking point of, you know, the event that I went to last night literally merges with the discussion of this morning's, the Villager e-paper. Because once again, you have to look at the greater good of society. And it's essential. You have to look at the greater good of society, guys, because you've got to look at who literally, firstly, does an activity not just for the aspect of survival, but also for the aspect of primarily helping a community, helping a family unit, helping a household unit, helping with other particular aspects, as well as also, you know, trying to run a business themselves. And the unfortunate thing is, us guys, we're not very well known. Us men, not guys, us men. We're not, you know, the label around our heads is that we, you know, we're pretty selfish. Some cases, unless you become a Catholic priest, you know, then obviously you are doing things for the greater good of a community or a pastor or other religious leaders for that matter. Now, when we've got to look at the particular talking points stemming from this morning's edition of the Village e-paper platform, if you've not signed up yet, dear listeners, don't worry, I'm not going to use that sentence that says, I don't know where you've been. Literally, I might not know where you have been. However, the prompt is very easy for you to become part of our free subscription platform. There's obviously also the Villager website itself, where you do have to sign up for a login profile. So you can also visit that in terms of getting up-to-date particular updates directly from the website itself. Alternatively, the ePaper platform, where we also have a Villager WhatsApp channel, as well as also you can follow us on our various social media platforms, where we also do promote it as well. But if you want to become a part of the subscription process, all you've got to do is just send us a particular text message that just says subscribe on WhatsApp to the number 081-200-4144. I'll say it again, 081-200-4144. You just send us a text message on WhatsApp, not on a regular text message, that says subscribe. Save the number, please, so that it does not look like we are spamming you with updates. And then ultimately you can enjoy the reading that we provide on every Monday, every Wednesday, every Friday. So, obviously besides me sort of like distorting there a little bit in terms of into the mic, our first particular talking point highlights a particularly interesting scenario in terms of and this is now taking a magnifying glass, and you're putting it now on Rundu specifically, where there is
a tally of 641 street vendors, which are predominantly women. And obviously this is a unique particular social, you know, social enterprise, look. And when I say social enterprise look, I'm actually connecting this particular, street vendor endeavor, which is purely done out of economic survival, as well as also an aspect of providing some sort of a social, enterprise to the community of Rundu. Now, you obviously see this also in a Windhoek-based scenario. You obviously also see it, wherever you go throughout the rest of the country, that street vendors have become ever more common in terms of, you know, as an actual, feature in many urban, aspects or many large urban areas of Namibia. Street vendors, obviously, you do know from which particular, if I can call it sort of like economic bracket, they do come from. These are people, unfortunately, they do come from, you know, low income households. Yes, you can take that whichever way you want, guys, but after Helmut and I, we dissected the labor, you know, the labor force report, of 2023 from the NSA, that is derived from the census report. That's the only particular indication that we can sit with, because that particular report helps you understand the categories of income levels found in the country. And the scenario obviously has been one of, you know, how prevalent does this picture speak to? Because I'm now tying in, like I said, the conversation that I attended last night, which was held at a university. It was a visiting Polish academic who presented a discussion about marketing social innovations. Now, he literally just refined a lot of the particular talking points or a lot of the things that I've seen in actual life here in Namibia. I've literally seen it. You know, I've seen it with my eyes. You've also seen a lot of these particular events and these particular initiatives happening all around you. But we just could not categorize them, identify them. And in some cases, these things are not done for money-making efforts. Now, with street vendors, they do have a social dimension. Because obviously, you've got a person to sell to another person. And you need another person to consume the product that this other person is selling. You do need it. We're not selling, many of these vendors and many people that have gone into business themselves as small entrepreneurs, you're not selling into the wind. You're not selling there into a make-believe scenario. The discussion is one about you need people to buy from people. And it's a human story. It's literally a human story. So the social aspect is also one where you sometimes see vendors sitting right next to each other. So then they have, you know, obviously to look at the other societal dimension is that vendors then create communities. If you guys have never seen this, vendors start knowing each other, then they start becoming buddies or friends. Here close to our studio, there's a bunch of vendors here in Klein Windhoek, area at the particular bus stop not far from here. There's one specific vendor that sells wonderfully, you know, roasted salted peanuts. Absolutely wonderful. You know, something unique, because obviously if you don't know that peanuts is technically a superfood itself. So, you know, if you don't have much, then you can always, many people always just frequent at these vendors. And they help with a particular sort of like a dimension of making money move in a different scenario. Now, you and I know, dear listeners, vendors have obviously always faced some sort of a backlash, usually from, you know, local authorities in terms of, they shouldn't be trading on certain scenarios and they shouldn't be trading in certain spots and they shouldn't be trading at certain, areas of the urban settlement that they have not received adequate permission for to do a trading venture there. Which is obviously the other negatives, because I myself have been a proponent in terms of, you know, if you're a vendor,
try to find out some information, obviously. Now, there are various aspects of vending taking place, because what street vendors create, they literally create a market. I realized this only last night. They literally create a market. The thinking obviously was one in terms of how you see, for example, let's say the city police guys react to the vendors in the Independence area, behind the Independence ShopRite area, they're close to the convent, in that vicinity. And the reaction that you usually see from the law enforcement that, you know, tries to sort of like chase them away from these spots that the vendors believe are the best spots to literally trade in, is a scenario based upon one just from a compliance mechanism. Now, a compliance mechanism or a compliance approach does not care whether, you know, this is the best spot where you are making money. It doesn't care. A compliance perspective does not care if you're making money here or not. All it says is just, but you're not supposed to be here. Do you have permission to be here? Yes or no? If you say no, what are you doing here? Then either things get confiscated, or either you get harassed to pick up your stuff and move along. But then you've also got to look at the areas designated for a market. I've seen that specific, there's sort of like a makeshift situation I know at UN Plaza. There's obviously single quarters itself that there's a designated market area. There's obviously I think the one that's close to Comasdal. But if you have to look at location, dear listeners, where these particular scenarios are based, positioned, is they don't follow the basics of the marketing principles. They don't. They really don't. I don't know who told who in the city of Windhoek that you can lump everyone together at single quarters. Do you know how big single quarters is? For anyone that's been there, it's a pretty small market area. It's pretty small, and it gets very congested there. Now, who wants to do business in a congested area? If you go to, what's the other place's name? The Comasdal one, which I've only seen once because it was literally empty the one time that I drove past it. It's literally like you threw it, you know, it's like people positioned somewhere else, you know, just far away from a market. But all the vendors know that the people with money, where there is money, are here in this side of Windhoek, you know. If you drive past Central Hospital to this side of Windhoek, specifically where you find Independence Avenue, all the business people are here. All the people with money are here. All the people that, okay, not all the business people, but all the people that have the means to make money move are this side. Now, when you see a particular, you know, headline like the one that we've got in today's The Village ePaper platform about, okay, 641 street vendors in Rundu is high. It is high. It is very high. Rundu itself, you know, from one side of Rundu to the other side of Rundu, you can literally, you know, you can completely walk it down in a couple of hours. This obviously indicates that most of the vendors, and these are registered vendors, mind you, with the Rundu Town Council itself, that most of the women, or most of these women are, not most of these women, most of these vendors are women who ultimately participate in this exercise of street vending. Now, it's cited here that most sell vegetables such as tomatoes, onions, spinach, and other greens, often at an affordable price ranging from $5 to $10 per bundle. The Rundu Town Council has cited that they can confirm these particular statistics. The assessment obviously done by us, the Village ePaper, indicates that the street vendors at least wake up by 5 a.m., often walking long distances from their homes to secure an area with enough foot traffic to set up in the town. Now, this is obviously not a particular dimension that speaks towards, you know, how should we say, a novel scenario, because I can already see what needs to be done by Rundu to help the local community along. You know, establish a public transport scenario or public transport installation setup that helps with moving people. But before we actually, you know, continue with our discussion, guys, we take a short commercial break and we come back right after this.
When you choose UNAM,
you get credible accreditations.
You get internationally recognized qualifications.
You get a university with a growing reputation.
When you choose UNAM,
you get a head start on local jobs.
You become connected in a growing Namibia.
You stay in the best country in the world.
Because you already know you love it here.
Open your mind to UNAM.
And UNAM will open the world to you.
UNAM is your university, Namibia.
Because the U in UNAM is you.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend. For 3 days only, ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like a 2 kg nice rice parboiled rice, only 32 Namibian dollars. 5 kg math and white sugar, just 90 Namibian dollars. 750 grams Nescafe instant coffee, just 100 Namibian dollars. 18 baby soft 2-ply toilet paper, just 145 Namibian dollars per pack. Don't miss out. This weekend only, get up to 50% off. Valid until Sunday, 21 September 2025. Only at ShopRite.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of failure.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Not fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person who does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past.
Mm.
And it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Okay, I don't want to laugh already, but just, you know, continuing where we left off specifically, just going through the particular article as well, you know, and terms of bringing you the next particular talking point regarding the importance of street vendors. Look, guys, I have a mixed bag feeling regarding vendors, street vendors and the likes. Usually, I don't like the name vendor because it makes the person sound like a, you know, these vending machines that you guys see, certain particular areas, scenarios like in malls and the likes. Where you find a vending machines. A vendor is sort of like a very inhumane term, technically. Obviously, yes, I forgot to let you know, guys, you can call through at 083-288-401 in terms of, you know, contributing to the discussion, the talking points and discussions so far specifically happening. Not just also from the EBIPA platform and also other particular talking points, obviously also from what David would have been presented. You can come through. Let's have a conversation. Obviously, we're in the second half of the show. That's ultimately as you would have been in my company from 8 until 10. You can come through in terms of your talking points and your contributions, and then we can have a conversation. However, I just wanted to cite something here, just, you know, ultimately to try and correct a scenario. I'm not taking issue with what my colleague Anna Kletter actually wrote. I hope she's listening. She's listening. But, the population distribution for Kavango West specifically, no, Kavango East. For Kavango East is 218,000. Obviously, that's based upon the, you know, census report that shows the population distribution there. And specifically, the gender split is 116,000 women versus 102,000 men. However, more women actually are the head of the households in the region itself, so that people actually can know also that many of these particular street vendors would also be, why a majority of them are also women, technically fending for the households that they ultimately represent. Let's get the first caller coming through in this morning's session of Unpacking the Day. Eagle FM, good morning, and thank you for the missed call. You can call back. Don't worry. You can call back. Obviously, you know, it would have been a scenario of you holding on a bit too long. Now, you obviously hear that in this particular feature that my colleague Anacleta wrote is a feature based upon the earnings potential. Now, the earnings potential is the one particular trader, let me rather call her a trader, outlined here is that she has to obviously leave home in a very, you know, in a setting which is very dark, that's meaning early morning. She has to walk almost 5 kilometers from the one area which is known as Tuhingereni, so that she can arrive early enough and get customers early enough. There's obviously your breakfast customers, you know, as well. Now, she says even if she just makes $100, it helps her buy bread and send her child to school. Now, this particular trader sells tomatoes and onions as well, which slightly is a bit difficult if you are a breakfast customer because, you know, onions and tomatoes need to be mixed together to do something. But before then, let's get our next caller coming through. Nicola FM, good morning.
Yes, morning, Dwight. How are you?
Cool. How are you doing, man?
I'm all right, too.
Yep. So, what do you want to share with us, Mandume?
I just want to participate also in the topic we have in hand.
Yeah.
It's been a while, man.
Yeah, it's been a while. I know, you know, Uncle Bonner pointed out, Helmut and I, we don't give you guys opportunity to participate in our discussions, you know.
Yeah, but it's true.
Yeah.
I haven't tried once.
Look, it doesn't mean that you should not try, you know. We'll invite.
Yeah.
It's just that there's so much knowledge to share with you guys, but you don't worry, you can always still call through specifically on the home run and share, you know, what you want to talk about as well. Yeah. But Mandume, we're on the Unpacking the Day. So, what do you want to share for this morning's discussion?
Yeah. I want to do just to also to integrate when it comes to vendors. You see, the problem I see with our country is that I think we want to these people to remain the vendors the rest of their life.
True.
Because what I'm saying so is that every time wherever you find the where municipality are demarcating their what district vendor to be what allocated a place to sell.
Yeah.
It's always behind. Look at this one for Komasdam.
Yeah. It's always like
far off. Who know? Who exactly say like hide them place?
Yeah.
Seriously.
And do you know what's the worst part?
When clear, you know, feeders here, eh?
Yeah.
Where even they put these guys? What these guys who are looking for job?
Yeah. Well, men
can get something there.
Yeah.
For them.
Yeah.
Now you are putting people behind there. Who's going to see them seriously?
Exactly. And if you go look at single quarters is too small. It's too congested. And there's only one kind of vendor that literally operates there. If you're not selling Campana, then, you know, technically you won't make any other business.
Exactly. And the thing is that also when you come to the new vendor to get in, it's very hard.
Yeah.
It's very hard for you to get in because those people, they already know themselves, even like, and some of them, they've been selling there for more than what?
Yeah.
25 years.
Yeah.
Just imagine.
Yeah.
But I'm telling you seriously, my friend, I hate it the way that our local authority, always when they are demarcating this place for the street vendors, they always just try to squeeze them in, all hiding them where they are supposed to operate.
Mm.
Except maybe the one who is for venial. And that is, remember, that is a private one even. Manduma, they are putting, because you can see that people have given a place to do business.
Exactly.
But to Groove Mall.
Exactly.
Marwa Mall.
Yeah.
Why they cannot do the same?
Now here's one of the unique scenarios.
Yeah.
Do you know that the mall, the term for a mall or the idea for a mall comes from the Middle East? If you ever go to Turkey or any of the Middle Eastern countries specifically, you will find the thing known as a bazaar, or you find the thing known as a souk. Now these are literally trading areas that have become like literally the malls of these cities or towns that are more than 1,000 years old. And all these people are literally traders that have been, and they do the same things that you see here in Namibia. They sell a tomato here, they sell an onion there, that one sells clothing over there, that one sells spices over there. And that's all they do. It's a business inherited from someone else. And obviously you can see with a street vendor, this is a man and a woman who technically is doing something for their business. This is for their household. So potentially you will see the child also inheriting the same aspect.
The same, yeah, exactly. And for us, I think it would be okay if we can allow this to, because I remember only the Ben in what? In South Africa. And also, because in South Africa, you can go around like, you see, there's a shop, like maybe Edgar's, what. Then when you walk a bit, you can find what? People are selling like those vegetables one by one, and what they are giving a chance in the mall itself.
Yeah.
But for our people here, either they are at the government, either they are being chased, like a municipality always chasing them, police, like in Shoprite there. Either maybe you go to Stop and Shop where you can say, yes, I'm in Africa. It's like you are in East Africa.
And
the problem.
But you know what's also
like just lose maybe what to be controlled. How many people are going to die?
Yeah.
So it's congested and you cannot. You are squeezing.
Yeah. Do you know what's also the worst part specifically, Mandume, about Independence Avenue? Yeah. And I recognize it has become a concern, for example, for like the city of Windhoek, because the mayor. Yeah. The latest mayor. I think it's like at the start of this year, there was a statement that she provided specifically that, but the business community must come back and reinvest in Independence Avenue. Remember when I explained to you, that Independence Avenue is technically dying.
It's already dying.
Yeah.
Now remember one thing that.
No, the only thing
that you wish to know there, gone.
Yeah, but
the only thing
that is keeping Independence Avenue alive is the two hotels, this side of City of Windhoek, ne? The two hotels, with that shopping center there where that Checkers is, and the shop right at the end, at the other end.
And the Zupac.
Not even Zupac.
No, Zupac, people are going there.
No, Mandume,
it's not famous. There's no grass anymore even there.
Exactly.
There's no fish pond anymore, but I don't know what they got.
Exactly. Now, and now in that intersection where Zupac, the FNB and the Sunlam building are, there where that Markham's is. There's also like, you could see it was a pothole. And someone just filled it up with sand. I don't know when last you were there. And someone just filled it up with sand. Now, it just looks weird. It just looks weird because you don't want to drive straight. If you come down from Fidel Castro, from that church at the top, you're now coming down to go down to Vernil. You don't want to cross that intersection because of that sand situation there.
That sand which is there.
And now you decide to turn left. You know you don't want to turn right. Heading down to ShopRite, because you will just face robot after robot after robot.
Robot after robot.
And one thing that drivers don't like is we don't like too many robots close together because you are stopping and stopping. That. Exactly. Mm. And then what has been the worst thing about Independence Avenue? There is no parking. So if you're not giving me parking, there is no business that I want to go see in Independence Avenue.
Exactly.
What Yeah. Why would a consumer come?
If I know that I'm not going to find any parking.
Exactly.
Do I need to park my car at the venue and then I'm coming all the way to this independence venue?
Exactly. And what is the biggest concern of Independence Avenue, Mandume? Is literally there is no consumer business there for you. So why would you go there?
Yeah, exactly.
Why you would rather
apart maybe if you are going to what? I think there's a, if I'm not mistaken, I think there's a what standard bin window. Along the side.
Mandume toch man. You know you will go, you can walk into any branch. Why you can walk into
any
exactly. Exactly. You would
rather get a ticket unnecessarily because
exactly. You know that you will even if you stop at the end, meaning at the ShopRite end of Independence, ne? You will go into the ShopRite there.
F&B.
Yeah, you'll go into the ShopRite there. You won't even go into the bank. If you stop at the top end, meaning where the two hotels are, then you know you're going to one of the two hotels.
Yeah.
For a function or whatever. But besides that, but Independence Avenue has lost its, it has lost its prestige.
It's true.
It has lost its prestige.
And what I think that they've done it is because of this new municipality bylaw. Because sometimes, honey, they think when you are chasing these people like a street vendor, you are doing a favor to the what? To the main shop, maybe was, residing there, selling there.
Yeah.
But the thing is that they don't know that every time when we are going even like to ShopRite, now we are like advertising. No. If I go there, I may go and buy something, like maybe for my lunch.
Yeah.
But on my way out, I want to pick up onion and tomato.
For the house.
For my household.
Yeah.
Exactly. And now you are chasing these people away. Do you am normal to go and buy a onion which is costing $15 single onion instead of getting a bucket for what?
Mandume, I know that price there is an example. so I'll allow you to get away with that price. But you are right, yes, you are right, yeah.
That is what is happening.
Yeah.
Because now you are chasing these people. Why is it chasing this? If you are like, you are chasing me away from also not to go to the shop. Because now I'm looking at, there's nobody selling tomato. No. Those people are there far from, they are at Venel. Then I better go to Venel.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Yeah.
And what is happening there? They chase all the people, street vendor was doing even what phone cover along the street of what? Independence.
Yeah. No, I remember there was one time, before I joined Eagle FM, but this is before COVID. Two journalistic colleagues of mine had to go take photos of the police were chasing away the vendors underneath the bridge there at Vernio. Those vendors there. You remember those vendors that were there? And they were not supposed to take photos of the vendors, of the police, because it's the police in action. There's this weird thing, but there's technically not a law, but the police sort of like locked up these two journalists. And I asked them, guys, why did you get locked up? All you had to do was take a photo here and take a photo there and go. And then the scenario was obviously that the discussion around also, sometimes police brutality. I know I'm now mixing in two different things now, Mandume, don't worry. But usually we have this weak point specifically because most of the vendors are women. They're not men.
Yeah.
And it looks a little bit negative specifically when every time when we've witnessed or heard, the police, telling the vendors move away, then it always looks like this sort of like, very bad scenario. So, I know it looked in many cases, it looks heavy handed, specifically when the police try to chase away the vendors from the positions and the places. But in many cases, we also have to ask this question, like we started off when you called in. Where is this designated, like, good trading areas? Because the vendors know you have to go where the customers are.
Exactly.
And for some reason, the local authorities go and position them behind a mountain.
Behind the mountain.
Next to Comasdal, which is too far. No one walks around in Comasdal anymore. Exactly. Where are you putting them?
Why? Just imagine even the Gomazdal scenario.
Yeah.
What is that?
Exactly.
The school and the Hage also. And those are people who don't have money.
Exactly.
Now, even you are in the hospital, Katutra Hospital, if it was close to somewhere where I'm telling you that feed us somebody, you are able to walk a bit, go and pick up maybe your apple and the orange, go back to hospital.
Exactly. But
just imagine. Now we have to take a cab, coming back, then again back and going back.
No, and you first have to go look for them, ne? Because you don't know where they are.
Yeah, you don't know exactly.
Yeah.
Then, you see, this is a problem I think we are creating ourselves. Okay. And at the end of the day, we are complaining, no, you find them, you know, a lot of people are supposed to be even catering by those, mall, which you are saying.
Mm.
They can even take up a lot of youth from the street. Because the person, if, let me say now we're having a Dwight as your cousin working. He said, Dwight, I want to start a business. Give me, I just going even to sell fruits and what.
Mm.
Or start up with something, maybe cell phone repair even.
Mm.
Where are we going to get a chance if there's a mall that didn't create even a space for you?
And the mall wants you to.
Or even like a printing shop.
And
there's nothing.
And the malls want you to pay. School. Yeah, and the malls want you to pay the high rental prices. Yes.
Exactly.
That rental price could have paid for the five people.
They're already chasing you out in order to enter, to participate in their mall.
Exactly,
because
exactly.
The moment, just imagine you are starting. But I think this is a thing which we need to talk about every day. Because look here, look, go. Did you been in Elana Fidi?
Yeah. I was there recently. Don't you remember when?
Yes.
Yeah, I was there recently. We had to go in. Do a cultural tourism thing.
Oh, can you see where Katiti is?
Yeah.
If you've been in Oshkango.
Yeah.
Do you see how far from the shop? It's somewhere there behind the, far, far, far from the people.
Yeah, but.
And you just wondering, what is this now?
Yeah, no, but Mandume, you do know what is the issue specifically in the north. You do know what the issue is there. The thing is that you've got to bring the town limits. I don't know how far those towns like Elana Fiti and Oshikango have literally gone to establishing themselves as towns, you know, like local authorities. Mm-hmm. So they've got to formalize the local authority scenario, meaning their limits, and then they've got to designate actual town planning. Because I drove, or the steam we were in, we drove from Odibo, you know, where the mission is, and we drove along the border back to Oshikango.
Somewhere,
we were far. I know, we were far. We were far.
How come you didn't catch up with Ngungula there?
No, because we were there part of a tourism situation. You know, we were there to like talk about cultural tourism and gather the content about cultural tourism. So as we're driving from Odibo to Oshikango, we must now driving along the border. Those little roads there along the border.
Yeah, the gravel road, which is almost dying now.
Yeah, so.
People used to use that one even before the one they create in the middle here.
No, this is I'm talking about this two track. It's a true track road that the tour guide took. Yeah, so I don't know if it's an actual road, but it's a two track, you know, a dust road.
Yeah. That's between Namibia and Angola.
Yeah.
Because once you step the other side in Angola, this side you are in Namibia.
The fence that has all the walls, all the holes in it, ne? That border
don't
fence.
Don't talk about it.
it happens. It happens. So, as we're driving there, and I'm asking now the tour guide, where are we actually? Are we in Oshikango's, what you call it, town limits? Or is Odibo a town? Because you know, when you come from the areas here below the red line specifically, you can see what is an urban settlement and what is, you know, rural areas. So I keep asking, you know, where are these town designations? Where's the formalization scenario? Because we also accidentally just, that's what I think. We just drove into Halau Nafidi and I was like, where are we now? We are in Halau. And I was like, are we in Halau? Is this Halau? He said, yes, we're in Halau. So we're going to now meet the governor. And okay, we go and meet the governor. But when you look at sort of like the discussion around urbanization, there is a big problem because most of those towns, like let's say Helau or Shikango, they have to be what Oshakati has. Oshakati was the only like truly formalized urban center.
Yeah.
You know, you've got towns, you've got suburbs, you've got other infrastructure positioned around it. So you see the formalization scenario. Now that is literally what all the towns face. Oh, I have another town to also slightly bash, Mandumi, Onipa. Because I made a joke. I made a joke. Does Onipa want to be part of Ondangwa? Or does Onipa believe it is separate from Ondangwa?
Ondangwa, exactly.
So, because Onipa is so small.
Very small.
Onipa is so small.
That was also a scenario with what Elauna Fidi. I don't know now, because the way Elauna Fidi set up now, it's like they are following the road. From Onuno, starting from this side, do you know the bridge? I mean, where you find the roadblock.
Yeah.
That's a roadblock with this, the, what thing it cost, 8.7 million. Never talk about it.
Okay, Manduma, we've been talking for so long, yeah. So thanks for coming through.
Yeah, we never finished. Let us give other people a chance, yeah.
100%. Thanks for coming through, man.
All right, man.
And, obviously, there, dear listeners, you know, slight apology in terms of the, you know, dissection of the content, the discussions, obviously, that are pretty, I mean, they can take you forever. However, we've got to move on into our next particular talking point, that ultimately being the next subject matter, the next talking point on this morning's edition of Unpacking the Day. Do remember that you can call 0832-888-401. Share what you can, ultimately, you know, want to contribute to the conversation. The second scenario is obviously the live exports dependency scenario for Namibia's farmers, specifically of, I'm now talking about, you know, livestock live exporting. My colleague, obviously, Inomenwa Erastus, he's sort of like changed his name again. He cited that experts from the agricultural unions are recommending that the country incentivizes the meat value adding systems to reduce live export and retain some of its cattle within the local value chain, adding that Namibia's heavy reliance on live exports is a structural vulnerability, which is correct. But here's the thing. If a market is willing to buy, then why are you complaining? I'll cite this again. After the COVID pandemic, and after the civil unrest that happened in 2021 in South Africa, if you guys remember, which now has led to the daughter of Jacob Zuma being, you know, dragged to court. She's charged. That's one of the charges that she faces for civil unrest and incitement. If you guys remember the 2021 scenario, but before we actually continue, we'll quickly be taking a short ad break and we'll be coming back right after that.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend. For 3 days only, ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like a 4kg Real Good IQF mixed chicken portions, only 175 Namibian dollars. 10kg Top Food Top Score Super Maize Meal, just 115 Namibian dollars. 730, 750 or 780 grams Nola Mayonnaise, all variants, just 27 Namibian dollars each. 2-liter Coca-Cola soft drink, buy two for only 35 Namibian dollars. Don't miss out. This weekend only, get up to 50% off. Valid until Sunday, 21 September 2025. Only at ShopRite.
Lipura nengeno wapogwa eva tere urikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweku tete opoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuan onongeshe fa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito da njuka okupitira oipindi konu konda doi nawa mine uto otukwetira o special ngetashia kengeshe fa omarudi kayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamwiri nawa ninge pata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora itatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile ko berewa mura hetatu natu bali o hetatu batatu oma filane Eagle FM the eye.
And coming back to listeners from the ad break right there, and obviously as we always specifically do, in terms of taking a look at the next subject matter and, you know, discussion here on the Unpacking the Day, we're obviously battling all the way down to the last quarter of this morning's show. As I mentioned, where we still left off specifically was in our second talking point, which is based upon the live export scenario, which obviously this morning's
if I can say, the article in this morning's edition of the e-paper cites that, you know, it is a little bit of a structural issue for producers, specifically farmers. There's concerns there, obviously, because live exports mean that, you know, you're not adding more value to the livestock that is being exported live. And the statement that I made just before the break is based from behavior that we have all seen and that we've all spoken about here on Eagle FM as well, has been, what has happened before? Has there been an issue before? Now, there was one particular scenario that stemmed up after, like I explained, the discussion of the civil unrest that happened in South Africa in 2021. If you guys remember that month in July, businesses obviously were attacked, storage facilities were also attacked and looted, and it was pretty severe. And obviously there was a court case that I last checked that was literally, you know, that pointed to the actors behind the instigation. Now, when you look at the actors behind the instigation scenario, one of them was, I say, supposedly identified as the daughter who's now in the political party of where her father is also in, the daughter of Jacob Zuma, the former South African president. And in that scenario, the months after that unrest, the South Africans were buying Namibian live exports and also, you know, if you can call it sort of like the semi-processed meat exports, they were buying it at whatever price. The South Africans didn't care. They were buying it at whatever price. And you will find that the actions on the ground is a scenario of the farmers will always choose a higher price for their product. You will always go for the guy that's willing to offer the higher price. Now, I know at the start, Uncle Bona started off with a liberal economic position and, you know, citing the liberal economic scenario. Uncle Bona, you have to read up on liberal economics. Liberal economics is the one that specifically is a little bit of a problem for us in the developing world because it will exacerbate inequality. So, yeah, you just have to look up that particular scenario. Liberal economics also speaks about that SOEs must not exist, which once again, many Namibians would not like in that scenario. When you come and look at the discussion of this particular template, because this literally speaks into the realm of liberal economics. Help incentivize, try to somewhat, not force, but rather sort of like coax a farmer. Coax a farmer to, okay, not coaxing. Coaxing is like faking it. Convince the farmer literally to look internally at value addition. Now, you then sit with another scenario in terms of how much absorption can the local consumer take? Because a farmer will not sell at a very low price per kilogram. A farmer will not sell at a below market price for what they believe their per kilogram, meat per kilogram measurement should be. They will not sell below that price that they believe. And like I've pointed out multiple times here, for specific, like on the home run, even to Helmut, because Helmut was also a little bit shocked that cattle, specifically livestock, they are walking, eating, sleeping, oinking, you know, mooing and bleating, investments. They are all, livestock is an investment. It's a living investment. You see the thing. It needs to have a calf, piglets, lambs. They are investment. They give you just more value. Now, when you sit with this particular scenario in terms of thinking about this the article specifically in this morning's e-paper platform, the article speaks, you know, positive one side, but it also generates its contrast, meaning its opposite. Its opposite being, if the South Africans once again say, hey, listen, we've got a shortage in our local market because we can't export to China. We can't export our meat because of fears of foot and mouth and other particular, obviously, you know, livestock-based illnesses that they always get pestered with. What happens? They will turn to Namibia. And when they turn to Namibia and they tell the Namibians, hey, listen, guys, you guys have world-class red meat. We'd like to put in an order. And then the Namibians say, oh, hey, listen, this is the price we want to give you. There you go. That's the price per kilogram. And they say, not a problem. Send it to us. Now, remember, this is not government to government talking to each other about pricing. This is literally private sector talking to private sector about pricing, about exportation and importation, about storage and transportation, about distribution, and what you call it, channel management scenarios. This is private sector talking to private sector. This is the best example specifically of where we want Namibia, South Africa trade relations to be. And yes, many of you fellow Namibians listening out there, you would love a dominant position. Namibia in a dominant position. We do own a dominant position with South Africa. Don't worry, guys. You just have to scratch a little bit deeper. We do own a dominant position, specifically. And then I'm not saying that you should literally go and abuse that dominant position, because it's obviously based upon good relations, neighborly relations. However, it's a scenario that you've got to look at. How do we further expand on that? Now, how to further expand on that? The value addition, the incentivization scenario becomes tricky, because I can walk into any supermarket right now and I will tell you that there's already value addition taking place. Unless we're talking about further advanced products. Because I've shown you already, how far does a potato go in the Namibian economy? If you think a potato is just for the vendor on the street, or the potato that you find in your retail store in the fruit and veg section, you are grossly wrong. You find a potato in a hotel. You find a potato in the restaurants. You find a potato, where's the other one? In the hospitals. You find a potato everywhere. You find frozen veggies. You find a potato there. You find a potato, where else do you also find a potato? In your house. You also have a need for potato in your house. So I've literally shown you 6 different other positions where a potato needs to end up. Besides just in the fruit and veg section, or in the, or with a vendor somewhere on a street corner, wherever you are in the country. Potatoes are used everywhere. Now go and think about, where do you find beef? Where do you find pork? And where do you find mutton and goat meat? You find it just as pervasively everywhere. There are hotels that have conference facilities. There are bed and breakfasts. There are your restaurants. There are your fast food outlets. Then there are schools that have these feeding programs. Then there's the hospitals with their feeding programs for their patients. Then you go to your house, the households across Namibia. Then you come to, what else is there? Then there is the cold meat production facilities, meaning making your Viennas, making your French bolognese, making your the sausages, various kinds of sausages, because now you get pork, chicken, and obviously the other red meat sausages. Then you find your other particular products that can sometimes, if you're specifically from the German community in Namibia, where they have a plethora of cold meat products that they make, meaning various bolognese. That's a cold meat. It's a polony. Various polonies. So, I ask you once again. It already takes place, but to what scale do you wish to push this up? It already takes place, and to what scale? Now, to ask the government to incentivize something, this technically means, you know, pay us or we go on, or we continue with our actions as we are. Pay us or we continue with our actions as is. Which is a bit weird. Now, they say that this was stated through the Namibia Agricultural Union's second quarter agri review for the year of 2025. Second quarter obviously means from April to June in this year. The NAU analyst, Leanne Nehoya, explained that it was important that government, farmers and abattoirs work together to develop a system that retains more of its cattle within the local value chain through incentivized value-adding systems. Now, with that, such particular development would provide an alternative channel for producers, allowing them to participate in the value chain without needing to raise cattle to slaughter. Moreover, it can also enable Namibia to ensure throughput, meaning slaughter animals, for its abattoirs and consistent beef supply. Yes. But we're obviously talking about a macro picture, which is a little bit weird. Because you can go here into the south of Namibia, where you will have independent, what they call it, independent auctions, which are not part of any particular national auction networks, or sort of like the high-profile private sector auction circuits or profiles. And those independent auctions will tell you, hey, listen, we have communities that we already sell into. There's a guy that I know specifically that I worked with him also before coming to Eagle FM. He was technically my manager. And he said, you know, he's got his own, you know, his own herd of cattle and, you know, and other small livestock. And he has a partnership or partial ownership in a butchery in an urban area, which is in Rehoboth. And he, you know, he, there's like this profit sharing agreement scenario. And what he ultimately does with his, you know, what he can allocate for, you know, slaughter, it goes directly into that butchery. That butchery then directly sells to the community. So in terms of coming to a scenario of local absorption, there are already communities that already locally absorb. Because this incentivization is based upon add more value here so that we are adding more value just for the fun of it. Because you obviously are adding value for absorption into the local economy. And the local economy will tell you what they can pay for per kilogram. Now, I can tell you already, there are two butcheries here in Windhoek. I will not promote them, but they are just examples where I found bang for my buck. I have found bang for my buck, meaning value for my dollar. I have found it. I have not found the same value in a retailer. And retailers are mass purchasers from the abattoirs, from the meat processing plants in Namibia. The retailers, they literally have their value addition, or they participate in a value addition with the other large value addition suppliers. However, I went to two community shops and I found better bang for my product. Oh, no, better bang for my buck. Better bang for my dollar. The bologna I bought from the one, you can literally taste that this is meat. That is not a mass-produced thing that you buy sometimes in some of the retailers. At the other one, the availability per 100 Namibian dollars of the various kinds of meat products that I could purchase. Better bang for my buck. Now, the crucial message that I'm departing here with you, dear listeners, or leaving you with, is literally, you've got to find the bang for your buck. If you are a frequent user of a, or a frequent visitor to a, what's the thing's name? To a mall with a retail store in it, you're obviously just going to be exposed to the mall with its retail prices. You would then call in here, for example, on Eagle FM, citing, you know, when did the retailers become this expensive? How did the price per liter of milk jump to that level? yes, obviously you would cite those particular, you know, examples. And these are realities that we all face. And you would obviously cite the price per kilogram for their red meat products that you find on their shelves. Yes, these are the realities that are taking place. However, you also have to be a clever consumer. Because if you have not known, specifically in the world of retail and trade, you go and you look for the bang for your buck. You have to become a consumer that is aware, that is price sensitive. You are naturally already price sensitive, but you've got to become aware. Because here's the thing. This incentivization statement right here in this story speaks about give us an incentive as producers to lower the price. It translates to that mechanism. Because an incentive exists in the energy industry. An incentive exists in other mass industrial applications in an economy. And when incentives are applied, it's about a price control mechanism. Now, the next particular statement that obviously comes through is looking at the quantity of, you know, these red meat products that leave Namibia. However, I'm not seeing anything particular to price per kilogram because I've been trained in my household from my mother to my, you know, being a 10-year-old of being sent to the shop and buying, you know, when you have to go buy meat products. I was educated. Look at the price per kilogram. Price per kilogram is the commodity. That's the commodity price aspect. Price per kilogram. What is your threshold? Namibia is rich in animal protein products. So if you are looking at the scenario, you should technically be arguing, then what is influencing the price mechanism? And nowhere, unfortunately, I'm not bashing my colleague. I'm not bashing my colleague, guys. Just take that in that scenario. But I'm not seeing the price per kilogram allocation here. Because the crucial element would have been, what is the highest threshold price per kilogram of what the consumer can take? And what is the lowest that the producer can accept? Then we are talking real economics. What is the price per kilogram, the highest, and what is the lowest price per kilogram? Just come and tell me about incentivization. You as a farmer out there listening right now to the Unpacking the Day, you would go like, oh, wonderful, that's a great idea. That means that I can technically ask any price and, you know, get some sort of a discounted value somewhere. We also have to understand, guys, that specifically the talking point or any conversation around incentives, it makes it a tricky thing because, for example, you would potentially hear that, the price per energy unit. Oh, well, we've seen those examples of a price per energy unit being incentivized. It happened last year. So remember, if you guys remember, the planned ECB and NamPower price increase for last year, for 2024 into 2025, and then the government swooped in there with a incentive to sort of like say, hey, listen, here's extra money. That was an incentive. Now, when you see something like that, that's usually at a macro level. It's not at a micro level. Now, there's nothing wrong with a industry demanding an incentive from a government because that industry obviously knows of their importance. in the national industrial perspective or dimension of the country. It's obviously dependent upon said particular industry to also champion animal welfare. I'm not talking about animal welfare, for example, like in animal rights and those particular. No, I'm not talking about those things. I'm talking about in the scenario of the welfare in terms of animal health. Animal health. Because we were this close 3 years back when the foot and mouth outbreak happened once again, the same collection of regions in the north of Namibia, where the American farmers were petitioning for our red meat to be blocked, to be banned from the American market. So that meant there was a narrative. There was negative publicity. There was reputation management and damage that was taking place. Now, if farmers want incentives, farmers have to invest in animal health and in agricultural standards and in agricultural means and in agricultural, good, what you call it, sort of like good agricultural practices. Because you can't walk up to a discussion and you tell your government, hey, we want incentives. And then the government will go like, but we hear from your own partners that you guys are selling substandard, are producing a substandard product. Look, your definition, my definition of substandard can be two different things, or sometimes it can even be the same thing. The biggest concern is obviously, do you have the means to step up? The discussion around incentives will always take place. Don't worry. It'll always take place. It won't be a discussion that just ceases one day and the next day it magically appears. No. Incentives take place in the mining sector. Incentives take place in energy production. Incentives will take place, for example, and even in the fishing sector. Don't you worry. It'll be there. In the last sort of like 6-7 minutes, obviously before the next program would step in, obviously that being France this particular morning, there's obviously on the third particular talking point that I just wanted to cite was the unveiling of the digital arts department at NUST that took place. Now, obviously, I didn't say this in the article itself, but obviously, Helmut and I, we will have a discussion about this a little bit later on the home run. Not today, maybe next week. It is on our planning roster because we do have like this internal planning mechanism. What I just wanted to cite here, guys, was specifically when you've got to look at the discussion of new skills being introduced, new courses, new education formats, new ways in terms of how you can try and grow the economy in your country, specifically through capacity development and specifically through educational programs, an important thing pops up. For example, I know what I wrote here, so I won't recite to you anything. Just so that you know, this department was opened. It's starting up with short courses firstly. There was a whole, you know, ceremony situation with the Minister of Education, Sanet Steenkamp, being present. The Minister of ICT would have been there, but she sent the commissioner from the, one of the commissioners from the Firm Commission. And they were all talking positives, you know, sort of like applauding this particular direction that one of Namibia's academic institutions is taking. But I've studied. As I told you guys many times before, I'm an alumni of that particular institution, NUST. And I stood there thinking, going like, but this is a department we were supposed to have at the start. I'll explain why, guys. Because in the article itself, I explained that, you know, the other phases for the department to grow into is that they will look at digital advertising, skills development and stuff like that. And I always stand there thinking to myself, why is Namibia always 5 years, 10 years behind South Africa? Why? 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 Any policymaker listening right now? Any policy analyst listening also right now? Why is Namibia always 10 years behind a skill? So now we're going to train people today, and then next year, something new happens, which makes that skill completely irrelevant. Completely, I don't want to say useless, but the person can't, you know, demand a salary of 20,000, 30,000 from the skill set because things have moved on. For example, one of the key concerns is, you know, graphic designers now face major headaches because now everyone can graphic design through Canva. Canva is for free. For free. Graphic designers are ultimately, they're now a thing of the past. Calling yourself a graphic designer, anyone can just now throw things into Canva. You take a photo here, you take a box there, you make your own measurements. Poof, presto, there you go. Abracadabra. I'm a graphic designer. We really have to look at certain particular things because, remember, it's about inputs. It's about inputs in terms of how do these inputs actually generate economic value. Guys, there was a time that news corporations had to buy these massive cameras. I mean, it was a specific camera. It was a Sony. I still remember because I once went and looked it up and I found out that there was a shop there. That shop is still there in Vernier. I went and looked at the camera and it was like $28,000 for this camera. And it was a state of the art, Sony camera because I trained on that camera as well, you know, in terms of my second qualification, which is this media qualification. And I was like $28,000 for this thing. So if you try to buy your own thing, you know, it just, because at that stage, appliance companies had this catalog of people that wanted to be, you know, like amateur filmmakers, or if you were a filmmaker starting up, you know, you could buy these various kinds of like video capturing cameras. All that technology has now been condensed because the manufacturing process has literally condensed all that technology in a smaller camera. Now you can have a GoPro as big as my palm. It's a little box. With excellent high definition capturing quality, being able to capture your particular, what you call it, whatever you're producing. You can have a GoPro. You can, for those of you who want to be expensive, you can buy an iPhone. Or you just go for the next best thing, which is a Samsung, obviously, you know. Us Androids, we always know how to step up. But before we continue, guys, technically, we're going to reach into the ending slot of this morning's discussion here on the number one talk radio station. This off the unpack in the day, but we're quickly taking a short ad break and coming back right after it.
The wait is over. The deals are here. It's Big Red Weekend. For 3 days only, ShopRite brings you massive savings of up to 50% off. Like a 2 kg nice rice parboiled rice, only 32 Namibian dollars. 5 kg math and white sugar, just 90 Namibian dollars. 750 grams Nescafe instant coffee, just 100 Namibian dollars. 18 baby soft 2-ply toilet paper, just 145 Namibian dollars per pack. Don't miss out. This weekend only, get up to 50% off. Valid until Sunday, 21 September 2025. Only at ShopRite.
And coming back there, dear listeners, as you just heard it right there, that ad break leads us into the, you know, after the 10 a.m. bracket. Now, just where I left off, primarily. And you can come through, specifically. I can still entertain like one or two callers, specifically. When you look at new skill sets, well, technically I won't be able to entertain any new callers, but if you look at new skill sets, guys, we have to really analyze here in Namibia. Why are we always coming with 5 years after the fact or 10 years after the fact with these particular talking points? We have to ask these critical questions because skill sets are crucial. Skill sets helps Namibia stay relevant in the broader economic sphere and context. Skill sets helps to empower Namibians of being participating in potentially a global economy. But skill sets should not come 10 years later. Not 10 years later, guys. Not 15 years later. Technically, this comes 10, 15 years later. Because the South Africans had something known as digital, what was that one thing named? Digital design programs in South Africa. And we're coming 15 years later, guys. So well, on that particular note, I see France is staring me down. How are you doing, France?
Yeah. What are you talking about? 15 years later.
France, I'm talking about, you know, skills development. Yeah, there's the mic, France. I'm talking about, you know, something about skills development.
You have your internet infrastructure.
No, France, that's not the point. The 15 years later is you bring in an educational program on a university 15 years later.
Exactly my point.
No.
You know that we are trying to put new internet. There's something that Federico said, that you know, our internet system is as old as 40 years.
Yeah.
So you are trying to put new infrastructure on a 40-year-old internet system.
Yeah. Without upscaling it, upgrading it.
That's how we are. So our society is not a knowledge-based society. That's why even our participation in serious conversation is lagging.
Mm.
You know, you can come up with a nice content and no call.
Mm.
But just come up with a junk content now.
Mm.
You will have a lot of calls. That's to show you that, you know, our people have been trained, have been raised up in junk content. And you see, we will have to work very hard.
Yeah.
To change that.
Yeah. It is already sort of like reflecting Helmut, France, sorry, because the, you know, trying to upgrade programs on universities, you can sometimes see how slow it would take in some cases for the university to react to something happening around the world.
Yeah. That's why even when we attend, international conferences, you literally don't have anything to say because what people are talking about, we are not there as a country.
Yeah, we are following. We are not leading.
In fact, we are not even yet following.
Yeah.
To some extent.
Yeah.
So you are going to make a statement that everybody is going to say, where is this coming from? So where is this person coming from? You see, that's why you have a Malawian minister traveling to Switzerland for a Zoom meeting.
France, you didn't have to make it that bad.
No, that's how bad it is, bro.
I know it is bad, but Malawi, I also realized Malawi is also one of the poorest countries in SADC. Malawi and Burundi.
In fact, Malawi is not even one of. Malawi is the poorest country in SADC.
Yeah.
Burundi is the poorest country in East Africa.
But it's part of SADC. Burundi is part of SADC.
Ah.
Yeah.
Okay.
Even though it's French speaking, which I was surprised. But it's part of SADC because Burundi is just to the south of.
But they are not members of SADC.
They are.
Okay, because I the last time I checked was Uganda,
which is
into SADC.
Yeah, which was also weird.
And
DRC is also part of SADC, obviously.
DRC, yeah, of course, Central Africa.
Yeah.
But then also Rwanda wanted at some point, but then they just said, okay, we are just going to be part of COMESA.
Yeah. Which is that East African / Central African situation.
Yeah.
Yeah. So yeah, it makes it weird because just like you said, a Malawian minister flying to Switzerland for a Zoom meeting. Obviously that was about how much, France, that was a clear chopping the money situation.
Bro, how do you travel for a Zoom meeting? You hear this, a Zoom meeting. You want to travel to Switzerland?
I know.
For better internet connectivity, what?
That is not the point, France. The point was, the minister wanted an excuse to fly for the Zoom meeting.
Yeah, you see a politician traveling from Windhoek to Wakana just to go and open a dumping site.
On that note, guys, let me hand over to France before France starts with his comedy. But once again, we'll see each other again, same time, same place, next week, Monday, as I'll once again also be standing in here on the Unpacking the Day. And we'll be looking at Monday's session of the e-paper. And various talking points that will obviously sort of like wet your palate in terms of how you can participate in the conversations. On that note, stay tuned for France. We'll be back right after this.